Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and the rest of Africa this Friday, January 3rd, 2025. Residents of Bor say the removal of roadblocks on the Juba-Bor Highway has exposed commuters.
As we deliver the world cholera vaccines in Balakan, we have to continue. And I want to urge the municipality, together with the organized forces, that we should have bylaws guiding the issues of open defecation.
And residents of Bor Town say they need more protection.
We are still keeping an eye on all the major highways. We have the forces at the strategic location. Whenever there is need for them to be regular patrols, they will be.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The removal of roadblocks on the busy Juba-Bor Highway has sparked mixed reactions from commuters, residents and security experts. While some residents in Bor Town and frequent travelers have welcomed the move, others say removing security checkpoints exposes commuters to attacks by armed bandits. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from the jungle estate capital, Bor.
The South Sudan People's Defense Forces, also known locally as the SSPDF, says it had removed soldiers from checkpoints along major highways in South Sudan following an order from President Salva Kiir. Many commuters and residents of Bor have welcomed the move, but others have concerns. Joel Chopper, a Bor resident and frequent traveler on the Juba-Bor Highway, says the removal of security checkpoints makes travelers vulnerable to attacks from armed bandits.
Roadblocks were frequently found on the road toward Bor and toward Juba, either way. And for the last 1 week, they're not there. You cannot even see them when you're traveling these days. It means that they are either taken back or they have deserted the places. And to my point of view, there is a security risk between Juba-Bor or because the absent can be taken advantage of by whoever that has bad intention over travelers.
Victoria Yomgo, another Bor resident, says she thinks the removal of roadblocks could lead to smoother traffic flow, greater safety, and improved business between Juba and Bor.
We are also looking at it as reducing insecurity at large, because anyone can come up with a checkpoint, and it can increase insecurity, because if even armed robbers end up making their checkpoint, it easily creates ambushes on the road. I'm also looking at the other side of foreign traders that bring in goods from the foreign land to Bor Town. Once their vehicles are attacked by the checkpoint, it also makes them increase the prices of goods in the market, so that at least they will recover what was given at the checkpoint.
Other commuters who frequently use the Juba-Bor route also think the removal of the checkpoints will improve trade. Mach Anyang is among them.
The checkpoint will obtain a source of frustration. Some soldiers will demand bribes, slowing down our journey. If the roads are clear, we will save time and money.
SSPDF spokesperson Major General Lul Roy Kong says the Juba-Bor Highway remains safe under close surveillance.
They should not be worried or concerned about the safety along the major highways, because we are still keeping an eye on all the major highways. We have the forces at the strategic location. Whenever there is need for them to do regular patrols, they'll do it whenever they deem necessary and appropriate.
Civil servants and organized forces in South Sudan have not been paid for over a year. Some analysts say this has contributed to low morale, with many soldiers abandoning their posts for the security. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng, reporting from Bor.
From Bor, we move to Malakal, where the World Health Organization says more than 1,000 cases of cholera have been recorded in the town of Malakal in Upper Nile State. Some residents of the town have started taking oral cholera vaccines to protect their families from the disease. For VOA News, Mamer Abraham Quad reports from Malakal.
22-year-old Adao Abiel, who lives in Malakal town, says a family lost a child to cholera. She says the national government and non-profit organizations have done the right thing by providing vaccines to Malakal residents.
From the beginning, cholera was very tough. It affected mostly the little children. I can say even from our home, one kid like this, 2 years, has even died because of cholera. I just have to say thank you for those who have the idea of taking vaccine to people. So that's a very good idea.
The UN Child's Fund, UNICEF, and the World Health Organization kicked off the oral cholera vaccine program Thursday at Malakal Stadium. Emmanuel Timothy, the head of the WHO field office in Malakal, says the town registered more than 1,000 confirmed cholera cases.
In Upper Nile State, more than 7 counties has been affected by cholera, and the cases reached to 1,080 something, and death cases are almost 10. Into this, we need to take a clear measures and prevention. We need to protect ourselves from cholera by receiving a cholera vaccination.
27-year-old Kak Gai Chol, a Malakal resident, says he is safe after receiving the cholera vaccine.
So those who have not took it, they're supposed to take the vaccine for a better tomorrow even, protect themselves and to protect others even.
Abenego Grand, the head of Upper Nile State's Rapid Cholera Response Team, is calling on the residents to drink clean water and wash their hands with soap.
On the side of risk communication, it should not stop as soon as we deliver the oral cholera vaccines in Balakan. It has to continue. And I want to urge the municipality, together with the organized forces, that we should have bylaws guiding the issues of open defecation.
The cholera outbreak in South Sudan was identified more than a month ago. More than 13,000 cases have been confirmed nationwide and nearly 200 deaths recorded. On December 31, the United States donated $200,000 to the WHO for its cholera response in South Sudan. The U.S. government delivered over 2 million water purification tablets in a bid to strengthen response to cholera outbreak. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwart, reporting from the Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
The Federal Bureau of Investigation said the suspect in the New Year's Day terror attack that killed 15 people and injured dozens more in New Orleans is a member of the terror group, the Islamic State, who acted alone. Investigations continue on the motives of the suspect, Army veteran Samseddin Jabbar, including potential links to another vehicle in Las Vegas driven by a U.S. soldier. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widakwasara has the story.
Heavy police presence in New Orleans Thursday after a driver slammed past a security blockade into the crowd celebrating the new year. 14 were killed and dozens injured before a police shot and killed the driver. The suspect, Shamsuddin Jabbar, was an army veteran who served in Afghanistan. Just before the attack, Jabbar posted videos online to proclaim his support for the terror group Islamic State, also known as ISIS, said FBI Deputy Assistant Director Christopher Rea.
In the first video, Jabbar explains he originally planned to harm his family and friends, but was concerned the news headlines would not focus on the, quote, war between the believers and the disbelievers, end quote. Additionally, he stated he had joined ISIS before this summer.
IS once imposed a reign of terror in Iraq and Syria before a U.S.-led coalition ended its self-declared caliphate. President Joe Biden met his Homeland Security team Thursday.
We're going to continue to relentlessly pursue ISIS and other terrorist organizations where they are, and they'll find no safe harbor here.
IS has experienced a resurgence worldwide with plots in Russia, Turkey, Iran, and elsewhere. Its branch in Afghanistan, IS Khorasan, claimed responsibility for killing a minister in December, the latest in a string of suicide bombings in the country. IS urged its sympathizers to attack during the holidays. The group leveraged civilian suffering in Gaza to radicalize and recruit, says analyst Clara Brokart with the Soufan Group via Skype.
I think this is a really important aspect. While this is a more recent development, I will also say that the current situation in Syria, where there is some extent of a power vacuum in certain areas of Syria, we'll also see ISIS likely strengthening.
Authorities are also investigating the explosion of a Tesla Cybertruck outside the Trump International Las Vegas Hotel Wednesday. The truck was rented via the same app as the vehicle used in New Orleans. Authorities identify the truck's driver as Matthew Livelsberger, an active U.S. Army Special Operations soldier. The FBI says at this point there is no definitive link between the two attacks. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Africa prepares for President-elect Donald Trump. Find out why.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what skill would you most like to master?
I would love to learn how to use my hands. That is craft work, making the baskets and doing more of the clay artwork.
So I think I will go technology any day, anytime. So mastering what I do already, which is practically technology, which is software development, applications development, analysis and data mining.
I would love to play the organ. I love it. I love the sound. I would want to have it at home to play to my family.
Now many people don't like to be teachers. So for me, I'm willing to be.
I appreciate people that I can sing because I can't sing myself and I don't have a very good voice. So I will go for singing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The 119th U.S. Congress will come into session today. However, after a contentious battle over government funding last month, the Republican Party's seemingly unified control of the Senate, House of Representatives, and presidency faces challenges. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
A new U.S. Congress set to start Friday. Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Mike Johnson.
President Trump will return to D.C. and to the White House, and we will have Republican control of the Senate and the House. Things are going to be very different around here.
But Speaker of the House Mike Johnson's leadership position is in jeopardy after his deal last month with Democrats to keep the government funded and open. Kevin Kosar is a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute.
Mr. Johnson caught a lot of fire from his GOP colleagues, and he has an extraordinarily limited margin for his majority, just a handful of people.
President-elect Donald Trump posted his support for Johnson on social media Monday, saying the speaker was, quote, a good, hardworking, religious man. But Republican Representatives Chip Roy and Thomas Massey have already stated their doubts about his leadership. And Trump ally and advisor Steve Bannon called on Republicans to remove Johnson from leadership.
Clearly, Johnson's not up to the task. He's got to go.
2 years ago, at the start of another Congress, Republican Kevin McCarthy faced similar challenges to his bid for the speakership.
A speaker has not been elected.
He was finally elected on the 15th round of voting. Meanwhile, House Democrats have expressed concern about the influence of billionaire Elon Musk after he stalled the government funding bill by posting his concerns about it on social media. Representative Pramila Jayapal heads the House Progressive Caucus.
Musk has been tweeting out all kinds of lies and misinformation about even what was in the package.
Change is also coming to the U.S. Senate as Republicans take the majority from Democrats and Mitch McConnell steps away from party leadership for the first time in 18 years. John Thune of South Dakota will now be the top Republican.
We have a mandate from the American people. A mandate not only to clean up the mess,
left by the Biden-Harris-Schumer agenda, but also to deliver on President Trump's priorities.
Traditionally, the first 100 days of a new presidency and Congress are a time for an ambitious legislative agenda. Casey Burgett is a professor at the George Washington University in Washington, D.C.
He's going to hit tariffs very hard. He's going to focus on the border and executive orders related to immigration and immigrants, particularly from Mexico and Muslim countries. And then he's going to work on any compromises he can to get through the legislative agenda on things affecting the economy, groceries, as he likes to call it.
The U.S. House of Representatives is also scheduled to certify the results of the 2024 election next Monday, confirming Donald Trump won the presidency. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Since its enactment in 2000, the African Growth and Opportunity Act, known as AGOA, has been at the core of U.S. economic policy and commercial engagement with Africa. It provides eligible African countries with duty-free access to the U.S. market. 2025 is the year the U.S. Congress is due to renew AGOA. John Nkumo Mbuku is a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institute in Washington, D.C. He speaks with VOA's Yehia Suihu about AGOA.
Well, there are some things that countries have to go through, but I think the most important of them has to do with the American definition of human rights. Because some of the countries that have been decertified to participate in AGOA have something to do with the failure of those countries to maintain a human rights regime that the U.S. considers to be appropriate. So democracy and human rights are very important. Countries can lose their eligibility through that process.
Professor, almost about 30 or so countries are eligible for AGOA. I understand you had a Zoom meeting in Nairobi concerning AGOA. What happens as we move forward to 2025 for African nations?
I think that one of the things we discussed at during that meeting, if African countries are to benefit from the U.S. market, they need to approach the process through regional cooperation. For example, instead of Kenya trying to negotiate, or say Kenya or Uganda or Tanzania, trying to negotiate agreements with the U.S. for entrance into the U.S. market, they should instead approach that process from the point of view of the East African community. The same thing with, say, Nigeria or Ghana, from the point of view of a West African community, which is ECOWAS, they would have a stronger way to negotiate with the U.S. if they came into the process as a regional bloc. And the idea there being that as Africans form this regional bloc and regional trade bloc and strengthen them, these blocs can then help them become a continental market that will allow them to negotiate more effectively, not only with the U.S., but also with other countries around the world, say China, for example, or the European Union. You can learn from the European Union the reason the Europeans are moving progressively towards a single bloc that will allow them to negotiate with the U.S. and China and other countries is because they already understand the benefits of negotiating as a bloc as opposed to negotiating as a single unit. One of the things we discussed was that African countries should approach AGOA from a regional perspective as opposed to one from a single individual country. They would benefit more from that process than they would if they were trying to negotiate with the U.S. as a single entity.
Will the U.S. go along with that?
It's not whether the U.S. would go along with it or not. I mean, in my opinion, really has nothing to do with what the U.S. wants as opposed to what the Africans want. If the Africans are strong enough as a unit to negotiate, then the external entity that is trying to negotiate with them would have no choice. It is true that the U.S. could simply say no. But if you look at it very critically, you're going to understand, I mean, Africa is very important to the U.S. Just look at the competition that is going on now in Djibouti between the U.S., China, and several other countries over access to that particular country. There's an East African community in existence right now, and it functions. I believe its headquarters are located in Tanzania, Arusha, and it has its own government, and it actually functions. And it has a constitution, and it's functioning. ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, is also functioning. It has its headquarters in Abuja, Nigeria, and even has its own court, the Community Court of Justice of ECOWAS. And the court issues judgments that are binding on all member countries, and the court has issued some very, very interesting judgments that I've read regarding human rights and the treatment of individuals. So, yes, those communities exist, and SADC, the Southern African Development Community, also exists. And so these communities exist, and they're doing quite well. They are not as advanced as, say, the European Union, but they are there. They provide the foundation for Africans to get together and try to understand that there are benefits from functioning as blocks as opposed to functioning as individual countries.
That's John Mukum Mbaku, a non-resident fellow at the Brookings Institute in Washington, D.C., speaking with VOA's Yehes Wehub. It's time to hear from you, what you think about this show and what we should do better. We start with a listener who records himself.
Hello, John Tanza. Happy New Year to you and all the journalists and the listeners of South Sudan in Pokas. As the new year begins, we urge all the group in South Sudan who are fighting to come together and accept peace, such that the country should be peaceful like other countries in the region. And also, I also urge the government concerned to also do massive disarmament, especially to the civilian who are having guns, because the number of guns that the civilian is having is more than what the organized and the armed forces are having. So I urge all the population who are having guns to be disarmed, especially in my states where cattle raiding, shell abduction and road ambushes have been carried out because people have guns. Let all the disarmament be done such that civilians can be able now to move freely and also to embark on agriculture to stop depending on imported food and also on humanitarian aid. This is Peter Gocha Nyangma Jongnut in Duke County, town of Ayel.
And a listener who calls himself Benya Richards from Yei writes, hello, VOA. The incident that happened in Yei Haigiru during Christmas evening was really touching, where two children and their mother were shot and burned in their house. This needs seriousness in the implementation of peace process. Innocent civilians are suffering. May their innocent souls rest in peace. Mbua from VP Refugee Camp writes, hello, brethren in Christ. Happy New Year 2025. I wish this year is the year of joy, love, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Let's put in practice so that we will make development in our country. Hakim Adinga from Yei writes, hello, VOA. Happy New Year. I'm urging politicians to be servant leaders and avoid enriching themselves with national resources, but use them for the benefits of the common citizens. Mabor Alat Rengu from Rumbek Lake State writes, hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. I condemn the sectional fighting that happened on Wednesday, January 1st, between Rumbek Center and Tribet County. I'm appealing to both commissioners of Tribet and Rumbek Center to take action and bring the culprits to book. We don't want Lake State to go back to revenge killings. Mading Malwal Aluang in Juba writes, we have already stepped into 2025. I want to extend my heartfelt wishes to South Sudanese. May this year be filled with love, peace, and hope to everyone. This is the time to reflect on our shared humanity and to recommit ourselves to building a kind and more compassionate world. May the new year bring healings where there is pain, Unity where there is division, prosperity where there is struggle. Together, let us embrace opportunities ahead to uplift one another and make 2025 a year of positive peace. Emmanuel Kumbo from Yambio rather writes, Happy New Year 2025 to all the beloved listeners of VOA across the world. I would like to take this precious time to appreciate the management for the endless work you are doing. May God continue to bless you more, especially John Tanza. That's according to Emmanuel Kumbo. Views expressed in this segment does not represent the views of the Voice of America or the management of South Sudan in Focus. That's all we prepared for you on this Friday, January 3rd, 2025. We now leave you with Colonel Mido and the song Longonyo. Longonyo in colloquial Arabic means someone who counts her money or his money in the bathroom.
Solo longonyo e mafiso na biruduita e mafiso na pesu maleta e isaleta solo kebir mafiso na pesu maleta dunia de kanita solo longonyo e mafiso na Ma fizona peço uma leita E salata solo que bil Ma fizona peço uma leita
Listening to Colonel Mido and the song Longonyo. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Mokbele Yabaru, and engineer Patrick there, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Saidu masakine Saidu akwana kulwe Saidu masakine Saidu akwana kulwe Kurushu takide mabido funita ya sabi Kurushu takide mabodita fisa mae Saidu masakine, Saidu akwana kulwe, Saidu masakine.